Good morning or early afternoon. And again, I'll just introduce myself. This is Tracy Robinson Harris, and I'm the host for the call today. I'm the Director for Congregational Services at the UUA. So I thank you all for taking part in this call. Let me do a review of what we're going to do and give you a little background to the call, and then I'll do a roll call version of an introduction for us. And the last piece before I introduce Linda Laskowski and hand off to her for the presentation, I'll ask the other staff who are on the call to introduce themselves. And our time frame today is starting now, and we have the conference call service reserved until 2:15, so we have an hour and 45 minutes. And this conference call and the resource that it's field testing with you is the result in part of our experience with various marketing outreach campaigns in the last 4 years, working with a number of congregations and discovering that we have a grand variety of ways that we count who comes through our doors for worship, and we have a variety of ways in which we use that information to help us get to know how to better minister to those who do come. And out of that and out of Linda's experience as an active layperson in our Berkeley congregation, we sort of got into a conversation about how we might be able to be helpful with some resources that would help our congregations both count in ways that could be more helpful, but then also have an opportunity to have ways to actually use those numbers to support membership and growth plans. So Linda had done a lot of work in this area and was willing to have us build on that by developing a resource that we plan to make available online through the UUA in the very near future. And this conference call and your participation are part of our field test for this resource that we're currently calling Congregations Count. And we decided to invite into the field test those congregations that have been in a covenanted relationship with the association around our marketing outreach process. And so both last week's call and those of you here today have gotten here as a result of that relationship and of your commitment around marketing and growth. So that's the large community of folks who have been invited to participate. And when today's call is over, I think we will have had a total of about 24 participants between the two calls. We chose a conference call because it allowed us to get a diverse group of folks together in an affordable fashion and to get some good feedback and experience with the resource before we actually launch it on the website later on. So our purpose is to give this a good run through and to get your feedback. Okay. Well, if you hear a bell ring as we go along, I may interrupt and pause to see who's joined us. That'll be the signal that somebody else has signed on. So thank you all again very much. Valerie and Susanna, would each of you introduce yourselves? Valerie, would you go first?
Sure. I'm Marketing Outreach Director for the UUA, and I help manage the regional marketing campaigns that Tracy referenced earlier. And, of course, measurement is a very important part of those campaigns. And I'm located in Chicago.
And Susanna?
Sure. I'm Susanna Whitman. I'm Growth Services Administrator, and I work with Valerie on the marketing campaigns and also in the Uncommon Denomination Program in general, supplying congregations with assistance and with actual materials and artwork. I also work with Stephen Jonathan in services to large congregations.
Great.
And thanks. A number of other aspects, which I won't go into now.
Thank you, Susanna.
Sure.
Before I introduce Linda and hand off to her to begin the focus of the call, does anyone have any sort of housekeeping questions as we begin?
Well, this is Valerie. I would like to propose, and I think Linda will set the stage for how we will handle questions today, but it would be wonderful if when you ask a question, you state your name, again for us so that we know a frame of reference, and your church would be fit. It would be great too, your congregation.
Okay, thank you. All right. Anyone else with a question, comment? Okay. Well, let me introduce Linda by giving a little bit of her background, and then Linda, I'll hand it off to you.
Great.
Linda Laskowski is the past membership chair and a current member of the coordinating or management team at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Berkeley, which is in Kensington, California. She has 30 years of experience in management for AT&T and associated companies, including 15 of those years in creating and running startup organizations. She has a long-time interest in organizational development and process improvement beginning in the early 80s, and she became a quality of work-life facilitator in a partnership with AT&T and the Communication Workers of America. She's got a great deal of experience in facilitating organizational development and quality process improvement teams, both in the for-profit and not-for-profit world, including organizational development training as part of graduate work at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. This seminar, a variation of it, has been given previously in addition to last week's phone call. Linda has led this process at the recent PCD Leadership Day at a PCD District Assembly, and also under the auspices of the PCD Growth Committee and with a number of individual congregations. So she's bringing a wealth of experience to this process and this resource, and also herself a passionate Unitarian Universalist. And as I've gotten to know her, it's been a real pleasure to work with her and on this resource in particular. So Linda, unless there's anything else you need for me to say in advance, I'll just hand this off to you and we'll get started.
That's great. Thanks, Tracy.
You're welcome.
And thank you, everybody, for being on this call, taking part of your Saturday to do this. And obviously, we hope that it ends up being time well spent for everybody. Just a few words about how we got here, or how I got here. And by the way, what I will do throughout this is to make sure that we kind of keep going and the call stays within the time frames, is at specified times throughout the presentation, I will stop and ask for questions. And that way, if there's something that is really keeping you from understanding what these tools are and what's happening, you can ask it at the time. But I would ask that we hold the discussion until the end. How we really got here was about 4 years ago, a little bit over, I became member chair of the UU Church of Berkeley, and we had a plateaued or declining membership and had been for about 20 years. I had been part of the membership committee for all of 3 months, and I had been a member of the church for less than a year. And, of course, everybody had really great ideas on what we needed to do to grow the church. I started reading the things in the files. I started going to the various wonderful growth workshops, things that were offered on the web. There was even things in my files, 101 Ways to Grow Your Church, that you may have seen. Great resources. And I found that it probably made me more depressed than anything because I had a limited amount of resources and I couldn't do it all. And so the real issue was, where do you start with all these really great ideas and really make the most difference when, in fact, you've got a membership committee that are wonderful workers working their heart out but have a certain, they're volunteers, and there's a certain limit to the hours that they can do. Which of these terrific ideas, whether it's buddy pews or blue cups or emails or postcards or calls or whatever, do you do, and can you do them all? So that's really what led to this, because as Tracy mentioned, my background had been with doing a lot of process improvement. So that led to this presentation and work, which I'm calling Congregations Count. So if you'll go to the PDF, you know, the file that is labeled Congregations Count, and make sure that you're looking at page 1, and it's called Tools to Make the Most of the Membership Journey. And so if you go to page 2, everybody there?
Hang on 1 second,
yeah.
Huh? I'm glad everybody else is there. Go ahead. I'll figure it out.
are you in the presentation? It may have been at the very end when you opened it up.
I just got to the right email. I fiddled a bit. Okay, Congregations Count.
Great. Okay, and then go to page 2, or what I call How to Stop Trying to Do Everything.
And the way I've been advertising this when I do it as a workshop is if you have all the resources, all the time, all the people to do every good idea that comes to you, this workshop is not for you. But if, in fact, you need to make some choices about what you do, that's what this is really all about. So let's go to page 3. So think about the membership journey. And, in fact, I borrowed this term from a wonderful resource we'll talk about later that's actually on the UUA site. Mm-hmm. And if you think about from when a visitor first hears about us or becomes aware of us in some way, all the way through to how they go through our membership process, you become aware, you come for the first time, hopefully you come back, eventually become a member, or some of us do, become an active member, and eventually you leave membership either through death, through a move, or through becoming disenchanted for some reason, for some other reason. So think of those 6 steps, and that's what we're going to be talking about here. And if you move to page 4, this journey then is a process. And a process is simply something that happens over and over and over again. So what it means is there's something that are collectively called process improvement techniques or tools that can be used to evaluate them. These got to be really popular in the United States probably back in the 80s when there was this real issue about American products not being very quality, particularly in things like semiconductor, automobiles, those things. And so what happened is there was even something called the Malcolm Baldrige Award where people really started taking these tools and using measurements and various techniques to come up with a way to really improve the quality of what they did. And so what we're going to be talking about here is a real simple version, and it's really not complicated, about using those same things to determine what part of your process is working better than other parts and to work on the parts that aren't working so well. So it's really a way to kind of focus on where you can get the most benefit for your effort. So what you do is you simply break that process down into individual steps, and we just looked at those steps, compare those measurements with processes from other places, other churches, and that determining which part is, and then you fix that part. And so let's take a simple example, which a lot of us have done, which is baking a cake. So if you go to page 5, you've got a cake and it comes out of the oven thin and hard as a rock. The question is, well, what went wrong? And you think, well, let's see, you baked it at 500 degrees for 3 hours. That would probably do it. You didn't put any baking powder or any kind of leavening. That might do it. How about too much flour? But how do you know? Well, what you do is you compare it to a recipe. And if you go to page 6, because recipes really are ratios. You just don't think of it that way because we leave part of it out because it's really per cake. So it's cups of flour per cake, salt per cake. Some recipes talk about cupcakes, and it's different things depending on whether you're doing 12 cupcakes or minutes per cake. But what you can do is establish a ratio for everything that goes into that cake, and you can do that for a membership journey as well. So if you switch to page 7, you say, okay, what recipe? And do we even have one? Do evangelical churches have one? You know, they talk a lot about growth. Well, the answer to this is kind of, as I say, a qualified yes, and I'm also saying sort of. And so if you move to page 8, let's start talking about this membership journey and identify what ratios we might have to measure various things. So if we start with awareness, that very first step, this is a really simple concept. What it says is you simply measure the number of people who are aware of Unitarian Universalism, and then you just divide by the total number of people. Well, what sounds very simple in concept, of course, is not so simple when you try to do it. Which people do you count? In the Bay Area, is that everybody? Is it the people within 5 miles? Is it 20 miles? Whatever. And so there's not a lot of measurements around this. There was some original stuff, and I actually have the wrong town here. This was Kansas City, not Houston. It's not readily available, but in Kansas City, with that initial marketing campaign, there was some work that was done around both what's called aided and unaided awareness. And so in Kansas City, it actually was 0.2% before the campaign started, and that meant it was unaided, so they said, you know, name 3 churches. And so it was very top of mind, and Unitarian Universalism came in top of mind 0.2% of the time. So it wasn't very much. So you've got something out there that probably were not necessarily well known, and if a simple way of doing it, because it's kind of hard to do that kind of research, might be to ask your friends. For those of you who have got friends who are unaware of what congregation or what a denomination might be part of, ask them what they know about Unitarian Universalism. And I find with mine is most of them get their information from places like Garrison Keillor's Prairie Home Companion, which is not necessarily bad, but I'm not sure we totally want to be known as the people who became missionaries to the Native Americans and converted them to interpretive dance, which, of course, is the kind of thing that Garrison tends to do. So if you move on to page 9. So that's the awareness outreach. So we're not going to really talk about how we measure that, but just be aware, if people don't know about us, it's pretty tough to find us. But let's assume now that they are aware and they decide to come, and talk about that first step on that journey. So we're on page 9 now, which is first-time visitors. And what I'm suggesting here, this is probably one of the things that we don't measure today, but I would strongly, strongly recommend that we do, not just for UUA marketing purposes, but as you'll see as we go through here, it becomes a really, really powerful number that you can use to determine a lot of things. So I'm suggesting here that you track local only. You know, thank everybody for coming, make them feel welcome, you know, all the things, but don't track them. If you live in Florida and they're visiting from Arizona, they're probably not going to be becoming a member. You know, if they're going to move, different story. So track the ones that become a member. Ask them to fill out a guest card that provides the information that we'll track. And if you move to page 10, this is just a simple example of the card that we use at UU Church of Berkeley and throughout most of the Pacific Central District. Fairly straightforward. Ask for their names, phones, email. Email becomes very important. You'll see more about that later. Their children. You notice down there that we're showing, we check off boxes about how did you find out about us, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. When I first came, we were not using a card. We actually put this on a clipboard, and we've got 3 or 4 clipboards sitting out there. And if you move to page 11, we were using a book and people signing in on a book. And think about using a card instead of a book for a variety of reasons. The first one is, in a book, do you have enough room to collect the information you need? You know, such as how they found out about you. And that becomes really key, I think, when you're thinking about how you focus your efforts. Do people fill in all the blanks? What we found is by putting boxes for them to check instead of blanks, it doubled the number of people that actually provided the information, because it was a whole lot quicker. And then, of course, the other thing is, if there's ever a waiting line at the book, well, what happens? If there's a waiting line at the book, the people in the back, as soon as the music starts, leave, and the people in the front are hurrying and don't fill everything out because they know there's people behind them. We even hand them a clipboard. You know, all those stragglers that come in as the music's starting because they kind of want to hide, we hand them a clipboard and say, here, feel free to fill this out in the service and give it to us afterwards. You are not going to get everybody, but we probably get 85%, maybe 90% of the people, and that's okay because it's still information. As long as you're consistently collecting the information, then what you'll get is the kind of data and patterns that we'll see in just a minute. So let's move on to 12. And so we've briefly gone through the first step of the journey is awareness outreach, and then the first-time visitors, and we've asked them to fill out that guest card. Then we also asked them at that same time to make up a temporary badge, and that's just one of these hi, how are you stick-on things. And that's different than what our members have. Our members have little plastic engraved things. And that's important, number one, is they're not anonymous. Now, some want to be anonymous, and that's okay, and they'll choose not to fill it out, and we don't push them to do that. But the ones who do, it's a signal to the rest of the membership, the rest of the congregation, I'm here for the first time, please talk to me. And, of course, that's part of our whole issue here, is making sure that when they come and they identify themselves, that we, in fact, notice that and do something with it. So there's one way to really show it, this big, bright, hi, I'm Sally. And then we put that information into a database. At the end of that time, we count all the totals per week of those visitors. And then what we'll do is follow up after they come that first time, either with an email or a postcard to thank them for coming. So that's kind of that first step for new visitors. Let me stop for just a minute right there and see if there's any questions about what we've talked about so far and about where we're going with this.
I like the Kip in Fort Lauderdale. I like the checking the boxes to make them do stuff.
Yeah.
We use the clipboard. It looks like a doctor's office.
Yeah, ours kind of does too, but you know, it works. Okay, let's move on to 13. So here's 4 years of my life in front of you when we started collecting the data in 2003. And so theirs are all the numbers of our first-time guests. Now, most people stop here. We actually never counted them. We just collected all these cards and stuck them in a box on the shelf. I started counting them, and very often we stop. This is where you begin, because I defy anybody to really look at this and get much information out of it. So move to 14. So the first thing you want to do is graph it, and I would defy you to get much information out of this either. It's a bunch of squiggly lines going up and down. It does show it could be as high as 45. It shows it could be as low as 9. It's kind of like a so what. So that's where I think one of the most powerful tools that you can use is a very simple thing you can do with Excel spreadsheets. And if you look at page 15, it's called a trend line. Now, that heavy dark line that you are looking at, if you look at the beginning of the line over on the left-hand side, that point is the average of the previous 12 months. So that is January 03, and so the previous 12 months would be all of 2002. So you can very quickly see that the average between January to January, 2002 to 2003, was about 34 per month. And then the next point on the line is February to February, and it went down. That means February of 2003 was less than February of 2002. So if the line is going down, what does that mean?
Losing members?
Well, this is visitors.
Visitors, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. You're getting fewer visitors. The trend is down on visitors. And you can see, with some exceptions on here, from 2002 to 2007, for the most part, visitors were consistently, over the last 4 years, have been going down at UUCB. Not a good sign. And it's interesting, this is also, you can see the results of your efforts and things that happen at the church. You know, a good example is 2002, the beginning, we had our ministers go on 5 months sabbatical. And that's really why those visitors are going down for that period of time. And then they came back, and so it started going back up. There were a whole variety of other things that started happening. If you take a look at how it started going back up again in July of 05, we added a full-time minister of religious education. We started getting a whole lot of families who were inviting their friends. And then we kind of thought, well, gee, this is easy. We don't have to do any of the mailings, any of the street fairs, the other things that we've been doing for a while, because people are going to be able to find us up here on the hill. And guess what? They didn't. And so we again started losing members up until about December, this past December, when we started really doing some things to encourage to get visitors, and it started coming back up. So it's a couple of things. It kind of tells you long-term trends. It also lets you know, is it making a difference when you, in fact, are doing outreach efforts? And you can see it very visually. So it can be a fairly powerful tool just to look at that trend line. Now, if you go on to page 16, this is where it gets a lot more interesting. We were just looking at how UUCB compared to itself, but how do we compare to other churches? In other words, what's the recipe? And that's a pretty straightforward thing. You just count the number of guests that you get in a year. Again, this is local adult guests in a year, and divide by the total number of members. And what most consultants will tell you is that if you want to be a growing church, the ratio should be about one to one. You should have as many guests in a year as you have members. So when we look at what we had last year, 2006, we had 256 visitors and 511 members. So we literally had half as many visitors as we had membership. So that would suggest you're going to have a tough time growing because you're not getting that many visitors. Now, we'll see later that you don't need as many. If you do a really good job of converting them to members, you don't need as many visitors. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. So let me just stop here for a minute and say, does this make sense? Do you understand what we're doing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very clear.
Okay. So let's move on to 17. This is the other kind of information and the other kind of, you know, magic you can do with Excel spreadsheets from those registration cards to take a quick look at where are they coming from. And the first thing you notice if you look on the left-hand side is that family and friends together make up half of it. Mm-hmm. And in a large church, that's probably fairly typical. In a smaller church, it's even more. In fact, they say in most churches, it probably 80 to 90% of your visitors come because of friends and family. So it becomes very, very important. And I think the statistic that I've heard quoted, and it might be a slight exaggeration, is that the average Unitarian Universalist invites a friend to Sunday service once every 297 years.
That's terrible.
So we found that one of the things that we did is consciously giving people tools. How about a postcard that you can hand to or send to a friend which says, come join me on Sunday? Some way to make it easy, because when we asked people, why don't you invite them? They said, well, I don't know how, or I don't know how to bring it up. And so there's some interesting things you can do here. The other very interesting thing on this chart is that little light-colored one, the Internet. When we started doing this back in 2003, the Internet was 11%. It is now 30%. And what we find, particularly if they are under the age of 40, is they have all checked us out first on the Internet. In fact, there was a really interesting keynote speaker, was Reverend Peter Morales from Jefferson Unitarian out of Golden, who he's the one that coined the phrase, repel fewer visitors. You know, if you want to grow. And he made the comment now that people come, and they have checked him out. They have listened to his sermons, the podcasts. They know his pictures. So they understand something about our values already. They're coming to see if we feel right. And so it becomes even more important in terms of the kind of welcome that we give them. So let's move on to 18. So now we've talked about the awareness and the outreach, the first-time guests. Now let's talk about what happens when they come back. Now this measurement is a little more complicated, but it tells you something important. I mean, you can not do it, but let me kind of walk through it. What we do is we use that guest register, and we not only put it in the database, but we use it to make up a pre-printed badge that we put in a plastic holder. So it looks a little more permanent. It is different than what the members have. So now we have one more clue out there. If I'm wearing a handwritten, hello, my name is, I'm a first-time visitor. If I am wearing a pre-printed in a plastic badge, I've come back. I'm interested. So it's a signal, again, to our membership is pay even more attention to this person. What we found is we were spending so much time welcoming the first-time visitor, we forgot about those who would come back. And we weren't spending much time there. And so what we do then is we make that pre-printed one. We even put a coupon inside. Our snack table is pretty elaborate. It's like full buffet meals. And so we put a little coupon inside that says, you know, thanks for coming back, and this is good for a free snack at our snack table. And then we encourage them to wear that badge and return it each time. And they won't always remember to do it, but most of them do. We even put a little envelope by the exit, so, you know, return your badge here. And that way we can keep track of how many times they've come back. And we enter that in the database, and when they've come two or three times, they'll get a call from somebody in membership saying, gee, you know, noticed you've come a few times, wondered if you had any question. You know, it's really great that you're coming. We're glad to see you. And after maybe five, six, seven times, then someone from membership would call and say, you know, have you thought about membership? Would you like to come to an orientation? You know, getting them thinking about this whole membership journey, and maybe it's time to think about joining. So there's a lot of things you can do if you keep track of when they come back. And so then just count the number of return guests. And if you do that, go to page 19. And this is just a quick sample of what a database could look like. We happen to use a proprietary system called Church Management System, which is one of these integrated, does everything for you. But you could use a spreadsheet. It does not have to be complicated. So then if you go to page 20, again, the interesting part is how do we compare to other churches? So think about, measure the number that returned in the subsequent 6 months. And actually, what we've discovered is you don't even have to track for 6 months. Four is plenty. If they're going to come back, they usually come back in the first 4 months. So think about it. It's May, and we have 10 visitors that come in May. So what you do is then you keep track of them, May, those same people, May, June, July, August, and say, did they come back? And if they did, then let's say in the next 4 months, of those first 10 people that came, three of them came back, then what you've got is 30%. And the typical range here, when we first measured this, by the way, we came up with, it varies from month to month, but on average it was about 40%. And we were horrified to think that only 40% of our visitors ever came back, ever. That meant, to use Peter Morales' words, we were repelling 60% of them. And then we discovered when I started doing this work and trying to talk to, you know, I've talked to Star King School for the Ministry, some of the UUA staff, also the Elbin Institute and some others, is the typical range for churches is 20 to 40%. 40% is probably best in class. which I find amazing. Now, I also expect that as more the internet is being found more and more, and guests would pre-qualify themselves, you know, basically a term that means, says, I already know something about you, that will probably increase because they're already coming knowing something about us. But we find, for example, that some people don't come back because we were too Christian or we weren't Christian enough. So there's a whole lot of reasons. But typically, if you get, you know, 40% to come back, that's pretty good. So move on to page 21. And this is the interesting part. Why do they not come back? And the simplest thing to do is to ask them. We've been doing a survey now for 4 years. It started out as purely print. We're now using something called SurveyMonkey, and there are others that do it too, online surveys. Very easy to set up. You simply send them an email. That's one of the reasons why you want to collect those email addresses. Send them the email, and we ask them very simple questions like, why did you come? How'd you find out about us? When you walked in the door, on a scale of 1 to 5, how welcome did you feel? And if you went to the worship service, did it speak to you? Did anyone talk to you? You know, that could be pretty powerful, because when you actually have this little survey and you take it back to your congregation and you've got, you know, half of the people saying, no one talked to me, when we think we're pretty friendly, you know, it gives you some pretty good data. You simply send out the link in an email, and then we supplement with a print version for those people who don't have email. Easy to use, and I'll give you a link to find out a little bit more about it at the end and make you an offer in terms of using it if you'd like to do it. That will make it even easier for you. So let's go on to page 22, but before we go on to new members, let me stop and see if there's, again, questions or comments about what we've hit so far.
Hi, this is Kristen from Cedar Lane. My question is, do you only send this survey to visitors who don't come back or to all visitors?
To all visitors.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
This is Heather from Cedar Lane. Sort of a belated question. My ministerial bias is to not ask anyone to do anything in worship besides worshiping. I wonder if there's another way to reach stragglers with the card.
You know, I'm sure you could. There are so few of those. I would say that on any given Sunday, if we have one, that's a lot. And you certainly could ask them to stop by the table afterwards. They may or may not do it, but certainly that's a personal choice.
Thank you.
But I understand your concern.
Linda, this is Linda. Make a distinction, sir and guest.
Could you repeat that, please?
Make a distinction between visitor and guest.
We tend to use the term interchangeably. We were using visitor for a long time, but there was a desire to use the term guest because it seemed to be more hospitable. You have a guest in your home as opposed to a visitor. So it was part of our attempting a culture change in our church is to use the term guest.
Oh, and visitor also implies, hi, this is Susan from Emerson in St. Louis. Visitor also implies that they're not going to stay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything else before we go on to new members? Okay, let's then look at chart 23. These are the UUCB new members. This is one of the things that most of us tend to measure. Now, whether or not we put it on a chart like this is something else. I found we had this back to, like, you know, 1940-something and probably earlier. This is another one where you look at all this thing and say, okay, this is all real interesting. I have no idea what it means. And so look then at page 24 when you add the trend line. This also is a little more subtle in terms of it, but you do start to see that same kind of trend. We found some interesting things. Again, the trend on O2 matched when our ministers were gone. Because every point on here, remember, is the average of the previous 12 months. And so we really saw our new members going down when the ministers were gone in the aftermath of that. When they came back through 02, 03, then it started going back up again. When we have had issues, conflict in the church, that was a very visible conflict about certain things like two services or implementation of policy-based governance. Interestingly, our new members went down. So interesting things happen, I think, based on the dynamics of the church. And the good news on this one, and it may seem slight, but from the high of 5, you can see that trend line was averaging 5 at a couple periods in time. down to the low point that we just hit not very many months ago, is a difference of 18 members every year, which for us is a lot. And you can see, again, the trend, for the most part, has been down, except for the last few months. If you go on to page 25, again, that's us compared to us. How do we compare to other churches? And what you do is count those new members in a year, and then divide the new members by your first-time visitors. And what that does is gives you the percent of your visitors or guests, as we were just talking about, that actually become new members.
Just, can you just say that one more time? Sorry, this is Lois from Bozeman.
Yeah. You count up all your new members and in a year and divide by the first-time visitors in a year. Now, this is one in particular, I think, from Bozeman. Good point on this is, and I'm really interested in the feedback from those of you on the call with less than 100 members, because you have a smaller base, you will be more volatile. And so some of these numbers may really vary from year to year, because you may have, you know, one family join with four people, and all of a sudden it kind of blows the numbers out of the water. Mm-hmm. So these tools for smaller congregations, I think, need to be taken with a grain of salt, because you have smaller numbers to begin with. That means the percentages can vary a little bit more widely. You can expect 14 to 20% in terms of those that actually become new members. And you can think of this as roughly 1 in 7 or 1 in 5 that will typically happen. Evangelicals claim that they get 1 in 4 or 25%, and it looks like Houston got about 1 in 4. And Jefferson Unitarian, which is Peter Morales' church, you know, for me it's kind of been a gold standard of how to welcome and integrate people. I think a number of us actually use the tools that they have on their website, and I highly recommend it, with a lot of their orientation sessions and other things that they do in really helping people in the membership journey, runs anywhere from 21 to 30%. So what's interesting about that is, though, even though, and Jefferson has grown from like 400 five or six years ago to over 700 today, and even though today they are not getting as many visitors as they are have members, remember that very first ratio we looked at? They're only getting about, you know, 0.7, 0.8. They are still growing because they do such a good job of converting the visitors who do come to members. So it kind of gives you a sense of, you know, the art of the possible. When we first started measuring at UUCB, we were 1 in 7. Actually, we were almost, actually we were worse than that, we were 1 in 8. And so as we have worked on particularly not the welcome of the people coming in the door, but when they come back, and providing ways for them to connect with us and really spending the time, we've improved that. We are almost now to 1 in 5. So we've gone from 12% up to 18%.
Linda.
Yeah.
It's Susanna. I wonder if people want to know how to get to Jefferson Unitarian's website.
Good point. If you Google Jefferson Unitarian, it'll take you right there.
What state are they in?
Colorado.
We can find them on the UUA website.
Yes.
Yep, you can
good
go
point.
To congregations on the homepage of UUA.org. And search Colorado.
I'd be curious at how much traffic that Find a Church page gets at the UUA sometime.
That would be good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Susanna, didn't they just put out a CD? This is Peter.
They did.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
And people could get it at GA or from the bookstore, right?
Oh, this is Tracy. The Ideas for Growth CD that was put out was distributed, and I don't believe is for sale, but if any of you on the call are interested, if you would email Susanna and myself, we'll see if we can find copies. We had some at the office. Those were distributed to congregations last year.
Mm-hmm. And to give you a sense of how powerful what they do is, and you know this intuitively, but in terms of numbers, you know, if you're currently at 15% converting, which a typical church is, and you can do as high as 30%, which Jefferson has been doing in the last few years, that means you can get twice as many members from just as many visitors. And so rather than, and this is one of the things when you look at and say, if my problem is I'm not converting enough, maybe I shouldn't be spending money on outreach, but really be spending the time internally, either getting professional membership coordination staff or really working on culture change within my church or whatever that is to change this ratio here. And you can also kind of do some work. If you think about that return ratio we talked about that could be as high as 40%, that gives you a sense, is my problem that they're turned off as soon as they walk in the door? Or is my problem that they're coming back, I'm normal on that, but they don't connect? And this ratio will help you determine the difference between that.
This is Lois from Bozeman. I know you want to wait for questions, but I just want to ask when we get to the discussion, if you could elaborate on how you deal with the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, how you integrate those people who are coming back for those many times into the life of the fellowship. That would be helpful for us.
Yeah, let's maybe hold that to the end, and then we'll talk about it. Good question. And because I've also, there's also some wonderful ideas on the membership journey, which is on the UUA website. And you'll see when we get to the tools part that we want to do fairly quickly, is I've got references even to specific pages. And there's great ideas there on how to do that. And then you can just focus on those things that help you connect. So let's move on to 26, which is active membership. Okay, they're new members, but how do you make them active? And this was a real difficult one for us because, first of all, we defined active as being some ongoing thing other than just attending Sunday worship. It could be the choir. It could be being an RE teacher, a member of a committee, regularly volunteering to help with the landscaping. But we had 500 members. How do you track all those people and get them active? And so this is a really good principle, I think, of quality improvement to remember. If you're a car manufacturer, you don't spend all your time trying to retrofit the automobiles that are already out in the field. You work on the new ones, and you get the best quality possible there. Now, people are not cars, and I thoroughly recognize that. They're not machines. They're human beings. But if you think about really focusing on the new members and getting them active early in that first 6 months, it probably forms a habit that they would continue then as they become a membership for the next however many years. The other thing it allows you to do, we found when we did some analysis of why we were losing members, we tend to be losing a lot of new members because they never, and we did some exit interviews and discovered they never connected. About a third of our new members were gone within the first 2 years, and that's pretty high. And you'll see a little bit later, when we focused on really getting them connected those first 6 months, and we did it through a whole variety of ways, is they stuck around and it reduced our losses considerably. So really focusing on getting them connected. We're at about two-thirds. I don't know what the gold standard is on this one, but because some people just choose to only come on Sundays. The evangelicals claim that 90% of their new members are active in the first year, and 75% of all of their members are active in something. It's generally an ongoing Bible study or something like that. So let's move to 27. And this is the last stage. You will lose 10 to 12% of your members every year, depending on how people move in and out. Moves are typically half of the losses, so think about that. If you're a church of 200, you're going to lose. You need to gain 20 members just to stay even. 20 or even 20, 25 members just to stay even. Because you will move, and most of those are because of moves, depending on how old a congregation you are. Some are because of deaths. But there's really only about generally 2, 3, 4% that you can focus on that are the ones that are avoidable losses. So move to 28. This is what some of our losses look like over the last however many years. And this is pretty easy data to get, and that's one of the tools we'll look at in just a minute in terms of how to measure this. It's pretty easy because all you really need are your new members and your total members, and you can calculate this pretty easily. By the way, is somebody typing?
Yes.
Okay, because I think it's being picked up on the conference call.
Sorry.
Okay, great, thanks. Or if you've got a mute or something that we could do. The reason I put this in here, and notice what we're looking at here, over on the far left-hand side, we're starting off with about 8%. So that means in the year 1994, we lost 8% of our total membership. And we had roughly 600 members at the time. So you're talking about quite a few. And then it was going up each year, and then in 1997, dropped down to almost nothing. What do you suppose we did in 1997? The real answer was nothing. We just didn't clean up the rolls. We had two brand new ministers. I mean, the last thing you want to do is then start sending letters to your membership saying, you haven't paid your dues for a while, and so you're not a member anymore. So everybody had a grace period for a year, which is why the following year is so high. So one of the first things you do if you start looking at membership losses and you see things like this, make sure you've got a consistent way of determining who's a member or not. And it doesn't have to be perfect. It just needs to be consistent. And so that's why when you look at these numbers from 2003 on, that's where I worked very closely with the church administrator to come up with a consistent way to look at it. So the decreases from 2003 to 2005 were real, and primarily based on our focus on getting new members connected from day one. And it really did reduce our losses. Now, in 2006, some unusual things happened. Primarily, we had a very unusual, almost doubled the number of deaths for a variety of reasons. And our move rate is really up. The Bay Area is becoming a very expensive place to live, and we're losing a lot of members to places like Portland and Colorado and other places like that. So let's move on to 29. And this is just a summary of the ratios we were looking at. You know, first-time guests expect about 1-to-1, return, 20 to 40% return, the new member conversion, the active, and then the leaving members. And then if you go to 30, these are some of the resources that I mentioned. And the first one, because it really is great, and Susanna put in the right URL there, the membership journey. And in the tool we're going to move to in about 30 seconds has got specific pages that you can refer to help you with the different parts of the membership journey in terms of where you can focus and where you can spend that effort and how to fix that part of it. I would guess a lot of you have taken the congregational self-assessment. If you haven't, that's a really good thing to go through. It's very similar to the same stages that we just talked about, you know, of the membership journey, but it's more subjective discussions about how we observe ourselves. So it's internal data, but it's still really useful. And then the membership listserv, that's one of the discussion groups. And I do a lot of posting to that, and it's a lot of good information if you're not part of it. You can just become a member, get the information, ask a question, throw it out there, and you'll get all kinds of suggestions from people across the country. And then the last one is SurveyMonkey, which is the online survey. The offer I would make to you on this is that for anybody who would like to just try it and experience it and you collect email, you can do it for free with SurveyMonkey, and it's pretty easy intuitively to set up those surveys. Because I've been doing it for several years and I just got the ones that we use, I could very easily just take the one, they make it easy. I can take it, put your name in there, send you the link, and if you want to try it, you can do it for free on my subscription, because I've got a professional subscription on it. And you get the link, you send out the email to your visitors, and I send you the link to the analysis. And so you can watch as the returns come in, see all the charts and graphs that are done for you by SurveyMonkey. And anybody, I think my email is included on this, if you're interested in having me do that, just to see if it works. If you don't already do something like that, I would be glad to do that. So before we move on to 31 and your numbers, any questions or comments?
Linda, why do you cite the evangelical faith tradition?
Because it's one of the few ones that has numbers. When I was trying to do this work, the big issue was, what's the standard? What's normal? And churches don't tend to have these kinds of things. But as I did the research, I discovered that the evangelicals keep these kinds of numbers. They do seminars. They bring people in. They do workshops like this where they literally are training people to use these kind of numbers to improve what they do. And so, you know, those of us who read The Purpose-Driven Church, I mean, the book drove me crazy, but he had a lot of really good ideas in there about how you can work with a faith. You just kind of have to, you know, sort of sort through some of the work. So I put it separately because I don't know that that's what we want to do, but I think it's just one more piece of data that says what's possible. And I think, to me, the fact that the evangelicals, for example, say they do a conversion of 25% with the threat of hell and damnation, the fact that Jefferson Unitarian can do, you know, 20 to 30 without that is pretty good.
Yeah.
Does that help?
It's quite a bit. Thank you. Pretty insightful.
Yeah. Okay, let's move to the spreadsheet. And hopefully most of you have actually got that up on a screen, because then you can see what kind of an interactive tool this is. If you've got paper, that's okay. It's just that you won't see the tool work.
All right, I'm a little confused. Are we on page 31 that says, now let's try your numbers?
Right. Now there's an Excel spreadsheet that Susanna sent out with that presentation. And so we're switching now to another file.
That's the membership journey diagnostic?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, does everybody have that file opened up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now make sure you click on, look down at the bottom and you'll see various tabs. And you want to be on tab D called Growth Test.
This is Lois. Hang on, I'm just having a little drama here.
Oh, dear.
Well, I'm trying to open it. It's okay, because Susan, go ahead. Susan, you can do this.
Yeah, I've got it, Lois.
Thanks.
Okay, great. So everybody open? And you notice the question at the top says, does my congregation get enough visitors to grow? And there's three yellow boxes there. So hopefully you've got numbers. If you don't, I'll give you some UUCB numbers just so you can see what it's like. But hopefully you've got your own. So in the first box, it says the current number of members. And I've got what's provided as your certified number, but feel free to use the number that you have now. And so if you want to put that in the first box, and if you don't have that number, you can put in 486, which is UUCBs. And then the next set of boxes, you can choose one or both, but preferably one. Ideally, you would have counted your first-time local adult visitors in the last 12 months. And if you have done that, put that in the next box where it says annual visitors. And if you don't have a number, you can put in 256, which is what UUCB had in 2006. Now, if you put those numbers in, you'll see below on the top green box, you'll see ratio of visitors to members, which for UUCB is the 0.53. That's a lot lower than 1-to-1. Now, if you don't have an annual number, what I've tried to do is put in this tool something that will help you estimate that, and that's that third yellow box where it says weekly visitors. So if you think about those of you particularly in membership that work with us all the time, think about if you haven't been counting approximately how many first-time local adult visitors do you get in a week, remembering that that's an average of the entire year, and so you kind of average in those weeks, maybe in the summer, when you don't get any. And so you can also do this with a weekly number. And if you put in a weekly number, then that second green box would give you another ratio. Not quite as good, but again, this stuff all has to be taken with a grain of salt. It's directional to give you a sense of where it is. So, do we have anybody with other ratios or numbers? What have you got?
In Fort Lauderdale, we had like 1.86.
Okay, so that says you get a lot of visitors.
And we're repelling them.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
Susan from Emerson UU. We have a ratio of about 1.6.
Okay, so that would also suggest you're getting enough visitors. You should be, and it sounds like you're also growing.
We are growing. Our biggest problem is converting returning people to members.
Ah, okay, right, and that's what you had mentioned. Any other numbers?
This is Susan Backer in Bozeman, Montana, and our ratio is about 0.71.
Okay.
What does that indicate? This is Lois from Bozeman. Tell me what that indicates again.
What that says is you have to do a really, really good job of converting those visitors to members, or you're probably not growing. And so it may mean that if you've got some ways of doing outreach and to be more visible and to somehow get more people in the door, it would probably pay some pretty good dividends.
Thank you.
Okay, does that all make sense?
What if you only know weekly and not annual?
You can use the weekly. Annual is going to be more accurate because you're actually counting. But I put both in just so you at least have something to give you a sense of where it would be.
Okay.
You know, for example, for UUCB, we average about 4.
Right, that's exactly what I've used, and I come up with 0.75.
Yeah, yeah. So that's still an indicator then. That tells you you're not getting that many visitors.
For too long, they've kept themselves a great secret.
Yeah, we tend to do that, don't we? And then you meet these people who say, I wish I would have known about you 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You would have made such a difference in my life.
Linda, this is Lois again from Bozeman. We have a kind of a bizarre phenomena, which is that we have 92 members, but we're, I think, Susan, if I'm correctly also, we average about 100 each week.
Yeah.
Attendance.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we have a lot more people attending than our members. We have a lot of people who choose to be friends.
Yep. Yep.
And when you think about that, Linda, what does that bring to mind, that we're having a failure of what do you call it, converting people?
Yeah. Yeah, and it also says, and this came up on the last call, because if you kind of think about it, once people have been coming a number of years as friends and never joined, there's no compelling reason for them to join.
Yeah.
You know, when I first took over as membership chair, we had 300 friends and 500 members, and I thought, oh, this is easy. All I have to do is invite them to join. Well, I did, and I got zero. You know, they have established patterns. They're part of the life of the church. They're wonderful. We're grateful. We want them to be part of the community, but they choose not to join. And so that's where you say, well, I'm going to spend my time really working early on the visitors, about giving them a reason to connect, inviting them to membership, all those kinds of things. Because if you think about it, the way this works, within 5 years, half of your membership is new, at least. So you gradually replace those people and be truly grateful for those friends that are such an important part of the life of the church, even if they choose not to join.
Linda, this is Camille from Emerson. Back about 4 or 5 years ago, I guess, when I was president of the congregation, we made it a habit as part of our new member invitation type thing to invite friends. And in the first couple of years that we were doing that consistently, we did manage to convert a number of friends.
Yeah, good
they,
for you.
They seemed to be waiting to be invited.
Yeah.
We have since, I think, stopped doing that and done a lot more concentration on only working on the new people, and there hasn't been any conversion of friends to new members in the last at least 2 years, possibly three. So I would throw out there that in the effort to concentrate on all the new people, that sometimes just an invitation, when it's time for the annual new member service or whatever, to those people who've been friends for a long time, they may finally decide to cross over the line, as it were.
That's a great point, so I'm glad you brought it up. What you're saying is, here's something that suggests it's never too late for some people.
Mm-hmm.
Don't
right.
Yeah. Good, thank you for that. Let's move to return rate. And so if you go down to the bottom and click on tab F, and this is the one that says, are we repelling too many visitors? So if you put in the number of visitors, so it's May, and so think back 4 months to February, how many visitors did you get last February? And so you would input that number, let's say it was 10, it's an easy number, and then take a look at your records, because of course we've now been keeping good records, and say how many of those 10 people that came last February have come at least once since, and put that number in the box. And that would give you your four-month return rate. You know, the presentation says 6, but like I said, if they're going to come back, they're probably going to come back in the first 4 months. One of the reasons to do 6 is over the summer, because depending on where you live, there are some people who leave for the summer or who tend to do a lot of other things and might not think about coming back for the summer, but will come back in September. So it's something to consider. It kind of depends on the pattern in your particular community. And then here's some information again. This is where you'd expect 20 to 40%. And there's a great reference in there. Suggestions on how to make visitors feel more welcome can be found on pages 13 to 17 and 19 to 24 of the membership journey. And when we put this actually up, our intention is to link that, do a hyperlink. So all you have to do is click there, and it will take you directly to that part of the membership journey online. Questions or comments about this one?
Kip in Fort Lauderdale, I don't think we track second time, comebackers. We get all excited over first time, and then that's nice.
Yeah. And this really does help you distinguish, is the problem that they don't feel welcome the first time, or is the problem that we just, after 3 or 4 times, they're sort of at loose ends and fade into the woodwork. And we found that was our problem at UUCB. We did not have ways to connect with them. And so, again, there's great things in the membership journey. Probably one of the more successful things that we have done is to do chalice circles and specifically invite these people who are coming back 3, 4, and 5 times. And the chalice circles are the small group ministries that are ongoing for a period of a number of months. We do for 8 months at UUCB. And these people then end up in a small intimate group, 8 to 10 people, discussing things that really matter. And it really tends to connect them to other members of the church. And ultimately, most of them do end up joining. So that's probably been one of the more successful things. The other thing that we do is literally the membership chair meets monthly with the ministers and goes through every single visitor who has come for the last 6 months and decide, well, it looks like this person, you know, you don't talk about the people who only came once. But you've got a record, well, gee, this person has come 2, 3, 4 times, and then the Minister of Religious Education knows that they have 3 kids, and they do such and such and such and such. And so literally, there's this conversation between the ministers and membership about what should be done with this visitor who clearly has shown they are very interested. Do they need a call from a minister? Do we need to invite them to a chalice circle? Should we see if they'd like to come to our Friday night game night, or they've been coming for a while, and maybe we should connect them with this other family? So there literally is a customized visitor by visitor, which we can do because we track them and we know when they've been coming back, as to which ones are truly interested that we can spend the time reaching out to them. Okay, on to G, conversion. And this is what we had just started talking about. Is our path to membership effective? So if you put in either annual, weekly visitors. Remember, this is a number that we've already used in a previous tab. So in terms of the things we normally collect, collecting visitor information is really the only additional piece of data we're talking about needing here. So again, put annual visitors if you've got it. If you don't, put 256 in. And then the weekly, if you have that, your approximation. And then the new members that you get in a year. The new members that UUCB got in 2006, if you don't have your own number, was 42. So the conversion rate for UUCB was 16%. That's gone up from 12%, and then we just did that was actually for 2006. Over the last 5 months, it's moved up to 18%.
In Fort Lauderdale, it's 2%.
2%?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. It's a great opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is Susan from Emerson. As I said, this is where our problem lies. We are at 11%.
Yeah. And again, the membership journey and the Jefferson Unitarian website, that DVD, all of those are wonderful references. Any other numbers out there?
Yes, this is Susan Backer in Bozeman, and ours is 12%. And I'm just finding it really interesting looking at the numbers, and it's really pointing out where we need to work.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Very helpful.
Good, good. And that's the idea because, you know, again, we'd like to do it all,
mm-hmm.
and we probably can't. So you really focus on where the effort will pay off the most, and then when that's functioning smoothly, then you go on to something else. You know, there's very often this thing, should we be marketing, should we not be marketing, what do we do? Well, it's different depending on which congregation you are. You know, in terms of UUCB, we get so few visitors for what we need to do is we have a major campaign coming up this fall that we're really excited about, and we think it will make a big difference. And it's exactly what we need at this time. So let's move on to active membership. This looks like a complicated sheet. It's something you need to do over a period of time. Because what you would do is that first yellow box on the left-hand side there where it's got January through December, just keep track or fill it in with the number of members who joined that month. And you probably have it for the last year. Then what you would do is you'd look at the July following January, and you'd say, okay, of the members who joined this month, and we just kept track of it on spreadsheet, who's doing what? Are they in the choir, RE, joined a committee? What have they done? And if they are active, you count them. If they are not active, then you don't. and then go on to, okay, the following month in August, now it's August, and I look back at the people who joined in February, and I say, okay, how many of these are active in something? And then I put in the number. And so it's just a way of kind of keeping track. And again, we get about two-thirds. I don't know if that's good or bad. But it does force you to start looking at people and say, who's connecting and who's not? And when you identify the ones who are not connecting, those are the ones that are at risk. Those are the ones that you start making special outreach efforts to. And this is the other thing. In the same meeting I talked about where we talk about literally visitor by visitor by visitor, and again, you're not talking about all visitors. You're talking about the ones who have come back. That cuts it down pretty quick. And here, you're talking about the ones who have joined. And you see, is this person connecting? And if not, let's do something about it now while we still can. And we also have another thing, one of the things that we did here that really helped is each, we join every month, and we probably get anywhere from, you know, 3 to 8 people. And we have, each month has a different new member coordinator, so it's a volunteer, sometimes membership committee, very often not. Board members are great for this. And they go through the signing ceremony. It's a little thing where people talk about why they've joined and what this means to them. And the new member coordinator is with them, meets them in that very intimate, wonderful space, and then kind of becomes their buddy for the next 6 months. Helps introduce them to people, helps, you know, is kind of their friendship and their lifeline into the church. And so they are one more person that helps with that outreach and bringing them into the church and really helping them get connected. And that is helped too. And because it's only 1 month's worth, it's not overwhelming. You know, if you ask somebody, would you come and be on the membership committee, they might say no. If you ask them, would you come and sit in with the 3 people that are going to join in January and be their friend for the next 6 months, they'll probably say yes. Questions on that one?
Good idea.
Kind of like having, this is Lois from Boston, it's kind of like having sponsors.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
In fact, that's probably a better term. New member coordinator sounds so institutional.
Mm-hmm.
I like sponsor. So, on to loss. And again, we have most of these numbers. We may or may not be looking at them this way. So if you look at last year's membership, and if you don't have that number, put in 511. And then this year's membership, and for us that's 486. Not a number we're proud of, by the way. And then new numbers in the past year. And this is where, if you're a small church, timing differences can make this look really funny. Because what it means is, if you took your counts on January 11th and somebody joined on January 12th, you know, or somebody then left on January 12th, it could kind of screw up the counts unless they're exactly the same. So if you're off by one number, it usually doesn't matter if you're a bigger church, but you may find some strange numbers with a smaller one. So for that third box, put in 42 if you don't have a number. And then that tells you, the first box says, how many members did you lose last year? So any numbers out there?
In Fort Lauderdale, we had flat membership of like 143 for both years, new members of 26, which calculates a loss of 26,
right,
and an 18% loss.
Yeah, that's high.
Mm-hmm.
That's high. Now, it may not be high for you, and that's why...
It's high.
Okay. Any other numbers?
At Emerson, we have 4.8% loss.
Ooh, that's low. Good.
Yeah, well, we have, as I said, been growing. We had 83 members last year, 91 this year, and 12 new members.
Good for you.
In Bozeman, we have a 2.3% loss.
Yeah, that's low.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, the other thing that's really useful, then, is those boxes down below the text, where it says movers, deaths, and others. Because this is where, if you can then look at those people that left, it can be real important to know why they left. If they moved or they died, there's not much you can do about it. But if they're still in town, there is. So in terms of real numbers here, because this is something, you know, you kind of have to go down and sit with the church administrator, who generally knows when people resign why, which is what I do. The very first year, we actually did a formal survey. and we send people a letter saying that we're going to call you this week unless you tell us not to. And then we literally called, ended up having conversations with 35 people to find out that they're still in town, why they left. And it was very, very insightful. If you don't have numbers, just to give you a sense of how this breaks down, in terms of this, in UUCB, for those of you who used our numbers, we lost 67 people last year. That was a lot, higher than we've had for a long time, about 13%. The number of people that moved, and I've got actual data this time since I looked it up, was 30. So put 30 into that first yellow box. We had an unusual number of people die for a variety of reasons. That was 14. And then you see the green box is calculated for us. Oops. There we go. And so we had 23 that actually are still in town but not coming. So those are the ones you kind of want to know why not. And we would we literally sit down and go through what are the reasons why these people left, because there's not much we can do about the moves and the deaths. So again, it's a way of drilling down into the data and focusing on the things that you can make a difference on changing. One of the questions that we asked on the exit survey is that if you had a friend or a family member who was looking for a church, would you recommend UUCB? And almost invariably, the answer was yes. So what we found was people were not leaving because they were angry or upset with us or thought we were awful, but very often they had come in a time of hurt or a time of transition, the classic tension or transition. And once they then healed somewhat and got involved in their family, very often they found a new spouse, got involved in other things, they didn't have that same need. And because they never really got connected and formed the relationships, then they didn't stay. That was pretty much what we found was what was happening. But again, it may be different for each one. Let's move to the very last tab, which is meant to be a tool. It's called Guest Calculator, E. And it says it's meant to be a tool in your planning efforts. So the question is, how many visitors do we need to meet our growth targets? So everybody can play this game. And so let's start with your current number of members. So put that number in. And then what is your goal? How many members would you like to grow to, and in how many years? Okay. Now, those two blue boxes, I put numbers in there, but if you have calculated those, and a number of you have from the previous tabs, change it. So, for example, if you're really running 12% instead of 18, put in 12. And if you really have a 5% loss instead of a 10% loss, put in 5%. And then what you'll get in that green box is how many guests, on average, you need to get per week to meet those goals. And think about how many you get today and say, is that doable? You know, if you're going from 2 per week to 37, probably not.
In Fort Lauderdale, I said if we were at 142 now and in 2 years wanted to go to 170, said we need 3 first-timers a week, which is less than we get. I mean, it's less than we get. So there's a pattern here.
Yeah, there's a pattern there. And again, if you put in your, you probably want to change your conversion rate to the one that, that's
closer to what we do.
Yeah. But it also helps, particularly for larger congregations. I remember when I first took at UUCB, we were at 550, and our goal was to grow to 800 within 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It meant we had to quadruple the number of guests per week we had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds so doable, 550 to 800,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it wasn't. It was not realistic to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So for those, you know, the Vision 2012s and the strategic plans or whatever we call them, this can be a useful tool to say what's really doable.
Yeah.
If you're a small congregation, it's much more doable to grow quickly because you're not going to lose as many people normally. Because you don't have as big a base. You don't have as many people to lose. You're not losing that 10 to 12% every time.
Mm-hmm.
So any questions on that?
This is Camille from Emerson again. I just have a quick comment.
According to the figures that we were using, we were showing a current membership of 91 with a growth goal of 109 in a year, and that came up with a need for 4 guests per week.
Uh-huh.
If I just jumped it to 160 members over 3 years, all we need is 1 more person a week.
Hmm.
It takes it up to 5.
That's encouraging.
Which, you know, when you do numbers like that, it's like, okay.
We can do this.
We can do this. Right. Very, very useful tool.
Well, the other thing is that conversion rate. You know, for those of you who are looking at like the 12%, mm-hmm. change it to 20 and look what it does. You know, it makes a difference in what happens in terms of reaching those goals. So this is a tool that you can play with to say, if we can improve this, this is how much easier it can be for us to meet our goals. So you can do a lot of what-ifs in playing with this. Okay, let me at this point then stop and turn it back to Tracy.
Okay. All right. Before I return to, I had made note of 3 questions that we might come back to for a brief minute. I want to ask Valerie and Susanna if you would like to offer a brief bit of feedback as well. Valerie?
Well, I was quickly going to say that there are great resources on the UUA website on tools for marketing. So I urge you to go to the website. Susanna, are they live or are they archived still?
It's all archived, but if you just use the word archive instead of www, you can still get to the materials that are on the old archived site.
And maybe we could send the link that takes them to it.
Sure.
Was that on Linda's PowerPoint? I don't know,
no.
The link for resources. I don't
no,
think
it
I
was
it.
It was the membership journey, but not
okay.
the marketing stuff.
Okay.
That's
so
a good thing to add.
We can send some of that information, and I can do a quick plug for GA, where there will be a couple workshops or breakouts on marketing tools for growth.
Okay, thank you. Susanna?
Sure. I guess the only other thing I would add is if you are thinking about outreach, to look at the archived website for Percept Demographic Studies, so that you have enough information about where you want to target, since it can be pretty costly to try to do that sort of outreach and bring in new people. And we can help with that.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. Through the course of our brief go-round there, I made note of 3 questions, and Linda, I'm going to suggest that you may comment on each of these if you want, and that should probably take us very close to quarter past the hour. The ones that I noted were the question about integrating the returning guest, and then 2 questions, one about how to communicate this information, and then maybe a word about the question that Peter asked, is like how might this be shared or taught?
Yeah. Let me start the integration. I mentioned the 2 that have been most successful for us, and that is literally focusing, is that monthly meeting between the membership folks and the ministers to identify who's connecting and who isn't, and then really focus in on the ones who are not. And so that becomes important, and then how you do it, it's that's where our new member coordinator or someone used the term sponsor. That helps because it's if the membership chair is expected to do all this, you'll drive yourself crazy. But if you, again, get volunteers, board members are good, anybody who likes reaching out and talking to new people, it can be really exciting and very, very, I guess the new member coordinator is for new members. We were talking just about visitors. But we identify the visitors that are coming back by name, and we specifically reach out to them. And that becomes really important. And inviting them to something, maybe it's a potluck in a member's home. The chalice circles have been great. You know, we just started that program a year and a half ago. We have 130 people now that are involved in chalice circles within a year and a half. So it's been a great program.
Is that your name for Covenant Group?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. And so those are, what it does, it, particularly for a larger church, and this is where, you know, my experience does come from that, is we're kind of big and anonymous, and that can be a turnoff for some people who are truly looking for connection. And so it allows them to connect in a much smaller group. I guess I would kind of maybe open it to those of you in some of the smaller ones in terms of what things really work. I don't know that you need to reduce the anonymity, but it's probably getting them involved in something that they make one-on-one personal contacts with other people.
This is Valerie, and in our congregation, we do have membership classes, and many of them form a covenant group right out of the membership class because they were all new together. They've bonded through the membership class, and they create immediately their own covenant group.
And for those of you who may not quite have the resources or the energy to do the ongoing covenant groups, one of the shorter terms and easier to implement ones is what we call Evensong. And that is very similar to a covenant group, but it runs 8 weeks, and it has a very specific structure with it. In fact, the Evensong program was actually put together by one of our co-ministers, Barbara Hamilton Hallway, and I think it's available from the UUA Press.
It is.
Yeah.
There's two books, and I thought she had another one out, but I can't remember. There are at least two.
Yeah. And so there's a shorter-term way to get people hooked in. Barbara's in the process of putting one together now for families. And literally, it's the entire family. So the children and the parents and any extended family members come and join this Evensong as we're kind of experimenting with different ways of getting people connected together. Because that way, you know, the kids kind of relate to each other, which sure makes it easier for the parents. In terms of how do you take this message back, that is always the interesting thing. We've all had the experience of going to a workshop, getting excited, and then you go home and you kind of, you know, you look at people and their eyes glaze over and numbers, you got to be kidding. How do you deal with that? I give you two suggestions. One is that I'll be giving this workshop at GA. So if people are coming to GA, tell them to come to the workshop and they will see this essentially the same presentation. Another one is we've coordinated this with Interconnections, which is the lay leader newsletter that comes out that Don Skinner edits. And the summer edition of this will include an article about the tools and what they're used for. So there'll also be kind of a brief. You can say, here, read this. This is what I was talking about. And I'm hoping by the time that that article comes out, and I kind of, you know, turn to Tracy and Valerie for this, that these tools then will be available on the Internet for people to use. And perhaps by being able to read the article, get a sense of the power of why they, of how they can use them.
I'm being quiet because most of you probably are aware that we have started a new website, and we're converting all the old pages to the new website in a phased-in response. So I do not know. Susanna, do you have an idea when our pages will be up?
I'm afraid I don't.
Yeah. But in the meantime, you know, the spreadsheet that we went through this morning or this afternoon works as well. It doesn't have all the hyperlinks in it, but it does have the references that you can use it. So it's just a little bit more cumbersome, but the basic idea is there. And the offer for SurveyMonkey. It can be very powerful to hear directly from your visitors what they think.
And this is Tracy. I think I would add just one comment, which is for folks who have a kind of reticence about numbers or for whom numbers are not exactly the most compelling frame, to begin to look more closely at some of these things, that, I mean, it is simply the case that each of those numbers is a person looking for ministry. And I picked up another turn of phrase from Peter Morales that was, you know, if you can't count them, you can't see them.
Yeah.
And if you can't see them, your chances of ministering successfully to them as individuals and families is not high. And so if you think of the number as a first look or one glimpse to be able to actually begin to realize that there's a human being who's had the courage to come across that threshold, we have an obligation now not only to count them, but to actually see them beyond that number that they are.
You know, Tracy just captured that beautifully, because these tools are about enabling you to focus in on those people that are seeking the hardest. They've come back. They're interested. They really want to be part of this community. And it's a way, you know, another Peter Morales quote is that he, you know, when he talks about growth and people say, but growth is not about numbers. And his response is, yes, growth is about numbers, but numbers are not about numbers. They're about people, which is, you know, what Tracy just said beautifully. Mm-hmm. It enables you to get to the person behind the number and focus on them and spend that time and energy because they're really looking for it.
Yeah.
Linda, any other last comment you'd like to make before I bring the call to a close?
Just a big thank you for all the time that people spent this morning, including those of you from the UUA staff.